And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back to the show. Joining us on Wednesdays is Wayne Winston, who brings his own particular viewpoint. Lots of times we mix it up with issues of race. Wayne, we've been talking, I hope you had a chance to listen, we've been talking about this proposal in New York City Council, which would not be the first. It's already in Cook County, Illinois. It's in San Francisco. It's in Jersey, in which landlords would not be allowed to screen for criminal background records, nor would they be able to use that information if they happen to know it in denying somebody a right to rent their apartment. We've got some callers who want to be part of the conversation, Wayne. Let me loop them in, and then I'd be happy to hear your thoughts on this, too.
Sure.
Okay. Randy from where? Randy, hi. Where are you from?
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Hi, good.
I'm from Trumbull.
Hi, Randy from Trumbull. Okay, Randy, so what do you think about this? Would you vote yes or no with this? And keeping in mind that in New York City, they are saying that 750,000 people in New York City have some kind of criminal record or another, which is an astonishingly large percentage of the population.
Well, I'm going to keep my answer short because I'm interested in asking you a question about this that has to do with this. So,
okay.
But yeah, no, I think landlords should be able to just look up that information. I mean, then you have the question of what's stopping someone else from looking up that information and reporting it to the landlord. If the landlord can't do it indirectly, or can't do it directly, I'm sure they can find a way to do it indirectly. The other
But then that'll be ripe for a lawsuit. The landlord's not going to want to put himself through that.
Yeah. I guess the other thing, too, that is just a possibility that popped up in my head is maybe it would actually hurt, certain populations even more if this law went into effect, because if they couldn't be background checked, then, people are just going to judge by appearance. And then you'll get real discrimination. But that leads to my actual question.
Well, you know what, Randy? It's interesting you should say that, because one of the emails I got on this was the landlord is going to find other ways and there will be more discrimination. That's one of the emails I got from a listener. So very interesting you should say the same thing, that when people want to find out stuff about people, they'll figure it out or they'll run to stereotypes and that may be worse. Interesting.
But because you know, can you tell us like the difference between discrimination if somebody, in housing, say, if somebody has a bad record, or, between, other types of discrimination, legally speaking?
I'm sorry, one more time, Randy?
So you can, legally discriminate, and of course, there's illegal discrimination, too, right? Like, looking at somebody's a criminal record and telling them, no, you can't rent here because you have a really bad criminal record.
Right now, you can discriminate on that basis.
Right. And what's the difference between that and not letting somebody in your restaurant because they're a certain color or...
I'll tell you. Because we have both a statute, the Civil Rights Act of 1965, and much, much case law and other statutes that literally say that one cannot discriminate on the basis of one's race, one's gender, one's sexual orientation, and it depends what it is. But race has been enacted in our statute that people who have public places like hotels or restaurants cannot discriminate on the basis of race. And that's because we made it a law.
So more or less, to oversimplify for my small brain, this basically means that you would have to have laws on the books about for example, not screening candidates for criminal background checks.
Correct.
So that's
otherwise you can.
Does.
Otherwise you can. Otherwise, because there would be a rational basis in which to deny somebody you can. And you could also, like, co-ops can say that you're not allowed to buy into our building because we don't like the color of your dog or the color of your raincoat. They don't have to have any reason. They can be completely arbitrary. They don't like your speech impediment. They don't like your job. They have a friend of a friend of a friend who heard about you and doesn't like you.
Yeah, and then how do you prove the discrimination? That's got to be hard to do too, right?
Well, it doesn't matter because they're allowed to do it. So there's nothing to prove. Mm. When it comes to entering a co-op, there's nothing unless you can show that they're discriminating on the basis of your race, which would trump anything else. You can just discriminate, period, end, because you don't like them.
Right.
Thanks, Randy.
Yep. Sure.
So Wayne, let me bring you into this. What do you think of this proposal?
Well, I think the idea is that people need a place to live. So because someone had a problem, you know, how do you know that they're going to be a bad tenant, that they're not going to pay their rent? You know, so it's really pretty much a school because we use so much discretionary thought process. You know, it'd be easy for now, again, people who even are coming back into society, you know, to go, well, you know, you may go back to jail or you may be a bad tenant. There's people who never set foot in jail. They're terrible tenants. So it's just a way of just trying to make sure that if someone applies to move into a spot, if they're going to be a bad tenant, you can always evict them. Not really what you want to do. I mean, who wants to do that? But it's like giving them the chance without using that as a hurdle. Sometime racism.
Don't you think? Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Wayne. Wayne, I don't agree with you on this. I do not agree with you on this.
Still happens.
I don't agree with you on this.
Even with black homeowners right now, who even get an adverse appraisal. Just by being black in a home when the appraiser comes in. And it's been proven from New York to California and so on. They'll have a black family or a multicultural family there, and they'll remove all the pictures and have a white friend come over, usually to set up, and they'll get a whole different appraisal, anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 or even higher for their home.
Wayne, I want to bring – Wayne, sure, can you hear me? Andrew, can Wayne hear me?
If somebody wants to do something, to find out, of course they're going to do it. But as Lisa said, you get caught, you're in trouble. But it's just trying to give people an equal shot because a place to live is so important. I mean, what are we going to do beyond that?
I don't know if you could hear me, Wayne. Could you hear me just now? I was trying to talk to you. Did you hear me? I couldn't tell. Are you there? Yeah, I don't think Wayne is hearing me well. See, I was right. He's not hearing me. 203-333-9422, 203-333-9422. Wayne, I hope you're going to call us back. I think there was something wrong with Wayne's connection. He couldn't hear me because I was trying to interrupt him to say that I didn't agree. And the reason I didn't agree is because the appraisal thing is a different conversation. That's another conversation. The real question is the information relevant if you're a landlord to deciding who you want to live in your space that you're paying the taxes for, that you've bought, that you're leasing out. And maybe there's a distinction between these big multifamily landlords and a landlord of somebody in a 1-to-3-family resident. Maybe there isn't, maybe there is. But it's just, and if I was a landlord, I'm not sure I would make a very black and white distinction and say no person with any criminal conviction can never live in one of my apartments. I might say it has to be somebody who's never had a criminal conviction for a violent crime, someone who's never been convicted of something having to do with domestic violence or stalking or strangulation or something like that. There are certain kinds of behaviors to me that are indicative of character, and if somebody's been credibly accused of them, I wouldn't want that person leasing property that I own. I wouldn't. It depends what the behavior is. It depends what the accusation is. It depends what the crime was. Wayne, you're there. We have another caller who's been holding. Andrew, they hung up. Okay, Wayne, are you back? Can you hear me now? Because I'm not sure you can hear me. Okay.
Yeah, I could. My ear pads, they failed right then.
Okay, I thought there was something going on. but anyway, so I disagree with you on this. I hear what you're saying about the need for people, but I think it's I think just because you shouldn't presume that because somebody has a misdemeanor conviction of 10 years ago, they won't be a good tenant, you shouldn't be able to not see what they did. If they were convicted of a crime, it's material to me. I'd want to know.
Okay.
Yeah. So we disagree on this. By the way, I want to say something. I've been corrected by a listener who says, and I have to double check this, but this is somebody who purports to know the law in Section 8, who says it's not illegal for the landlord to collect the rent over and above the amount of a Section 8 voucher. The tenant might be responsible for the difference between the Section 8 voucher and the rent. My assumption was that a Section 8 voucher meant that the landlord could only accept that and wasn't allowed to take any extra money, but someone is correcting me that that's not, in fact, the law. Wayne, do you happen to know about this Section 8 law? Do you know yourself? I don't know.
I can tell you, yes, that it is quite common, and often that's how a lot of people can only get into, you know, housing, because the if you put it in market rate or what Section 8 gives you, it's not always at market rate.
Of course.
And if they want a little bit higher, then you would be like kind of frozen out of the market. So they'll have them make up that difference. It could be $10. It could be $400. I think when you get charged exorbitant prices, of course, then that's a whole nother story right there. But yes, it's not uncommon. It's not uncommon.
All right, 203-333-9422. We'll be right back. Wayne Winston and I have been talking about a proposal in New York City. Would you want to see it pass there? Would you want it here? That would not allow landlords to look at criminal records of prospective tenants. And if they did know of a criminal history, would not be able to use that as a basis to reject them. 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.
And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
By the way, Wayne, welcome back to the show, 203-333-9422. This is a reason why not all criminal records are the same. This is an unbelievable story. Listen to this, Wayne. Andres Velasquez in Queens was arrested because he was swimming in the Rockaways after 6 p.m. He wasn't asked to get out of the water. He was arrested. And listen to what the police said. The Parks Police said he didn't have ID on him. He comes out sopping wet in swim trunks. And they say to him, you're swimming after 6 p.m. You're not allowed to. And they arrested him. They arrested him. It was a tense encounter at Rockaway Beach as a lot of people are trying to cool off in this heat wave. The summons was for disorderly conduct and failure to comply with the Parks Enforcement Patrol in providing an ID. Could you imagine? He was arrested. He wasn't just told, get out of the water, it's too late. Lifeguards are only on duty between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. And apparently you're not allowed to swim outside of those hours because they've had so many drownings in the Rockaway. They have a really, really big undertow there. I grew up around there, Wayne. I grew up around Rockaway. My grandma lived for many years. My grandma and papa lived for many years on Beach 19th Street, right on Rockaway Beach. And we used to walk in that sand. And on the other side of this little water area is Atlantic Beach. And those were the beach clubs that my grandparents belonged to. And we used to go every summer. And I still remember in my head, be careful of the undertow, the undertow, the undertow. Because when you would stand in the ocean and you would just stand there, the wave would take almost all the sand out from under your heels and toe on the way back in. Do you know what I mean? Right. Would just go right back in. Anyway, I just wanted our listeners to know that sometimes people who have the badge and the ability to arrest, they sometimes, it seems to me, aren't always properly discretionary about when they're supposed to do so. I never heard of anybody being arrested for swimming after 6 o'clock. Called out of the water, sure. But arrested?
I mean, seriously. Yeah, you know, so this goes back to, okay, and this is what's going to come up. Was he black or was he white that was arrested?
So, well, his name was Andres Velasquez, so he was probably Latina, okay. Right?
So he's probably Latina. So then it goes, okay, if this was a white guy swimming out there, would they have arrested him? I'm not saying they would not have done something. But this is the typical psychology that goes, if this was a person.
Well, the people arresting him were black, Wayne. I'm looking at the picture. The park officers were black. I mean, darker than Andre Velasquez. They're holding him in handcuffs. They've taken him away from the beach in wet swim trunks without a towel. And they're black.
Okay, so I'm going to take it a step further. That's why I always clarify that whole race thing, because that's what goes through people's minds first. That's why I ask.
Okay.
So, two, it goes into no matter what color that you are, in a position of authority, like a police officer, as I've said many times on the show, there's some police officers who are black, who are abusive just as much as white. It's just that the racist psychology, where the N-word and all this other stuff comes out of, usually comes from a person who's not black. But a officer who is abusive, I don't think there was any reason for that. I mean, they have a lot of discretion. I mean, they could have given him a ticket. They could have done anything. And then he's like, they're saying that, you know, he's resisting arrest. I mean, you're probably going like, man, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, what are you doing? You're in your freaking swim trunks and you don't have an ID. I mean, that's somebody, they just want to arrest this young man for whatever reason. And it is as appalling to me, even though these men are black, it is as appalling to me as he was white. It's these types of officers who just take their job too far, because the idea is to keep the public safe, not to punish people because they didn't listen to you. And that's what I think happened here, which we run into enough in most situations in this country when we get into that across the board. When you have an enforcement officer who does not like that you didn't conform in some way, I don't know how much. I mean, I wasn't there.
Well, this is what it says. It says he's a dog walker. I mean, you got to see the picture. The picture tells it all. He's 33 years old. He heard a whistle. He said he was cooling off in the water after a very hot day, and goodness knows the weather has been excruciatingly hot. He thought the whistle was merely a signal that swimmers could remain in the water at their own risk. But a few minutes later, he heard someone yelling at him through a bullhorn to leave. And on the shore, he saw a line of New York City Parks Department patrol officers waiting for him. He was arrested and walked off the beach in handcuffs, wearing his still wet swim trunks. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That is tragic, and it's an embarrassment to the New York, you know, Parks Department. There's better stuff to do than arrest a guy who's swimming in the water. I mean, I don't understand it, but I do. It's just one of those things I'm talking about. When people have power issues, they can be of any color and create a problem for the person that they're dealing with. I feel sorry for that, that young man, and he's 33, but I feel sorry for him.
All right, let's go to a caller. We've got Damien from Milford. Damien, you want to weigh in on this?
Lisa, I'm surprised that you're going on like this. Do this story next week and find out the facts. This reminds me of the subway thing where the cop asked the young 16-year-old, can you please leave the station? You did not pay for your fare. That's what he asked. And the 16-year-old was beating the hell out of a cop. Do we really know the facts on this?
Yeah, let me tell you the facts, Damien. Let me tell you the facts. Velasquez wasn't swimming where he was supposed to be swimming. There was no lifeguard station there anymore because it was after 6 o'clock. But hold on, Damien. Let me finish. They said that he was arrested, or the summons was for disorderly conduct and failure to comply in providing an ID, because they asked him for his ID. And I guess he got, you know, he said, I don't have one, or I don't want to give you one, or something like that. Mr. Velasquez admits that he initially refused to provide his ID because he said he didn't have it with him in the water. But after several Parks Department employees wrestled him to the ground and handcuffed him, he asked a friend to retrieve his ID, but he was told it was too late. He said he was unaware of signs prohibiting swimming on the beach, and only noticed them after officers removed a covering from one. And the lifeguards are quoted in this article, Damien, as saying the arrest was unusual and, quote, kind of outrageous. About 300 people are asked to leave the waters at Rockaway Beach every single day. Arrests are rare. There was only one other arrest made this year at the Rockaways, and that was for driving under the influence, which is reasonable. Nobody wants anybody drunk driving anywhere. So it's just an interesting story, Damien. These are the facts as we know them. Do we know all the facts? Probably not. But these are the facts as we know them.
Right. So he must have been acting out in order for them to arrest him.
But he was in a wet bathing suit coming out of the beach.
Yeah, really? So if he's cursing or carrying on, I don't know. I'm not getting it.
Okay.
I'm on the police side because
okay. All right, Damien. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Elizabeth from Stamford. You're on the air. We're talking about the story, and Wayne Winston is with us too. Hi.
Yes. Hi, Lisa and Wayne. I'm calling in because I listen to a lot of radio, including New York talk radio. And what I heard about this story a couple of days back is the guy was hot. You know, he just decided I'll go for a swim, just as you said. And apparently there's so much fury. There's so much anger about people being not arrested for crimes. There's so much crime being reported in New York. And so many people either not being arrested or being arrested and immediately being bounced out because of
you probably know what, you know, Joanna got attacked with me walking. I mean, my daughter got assaulted on the streets of New York. So, and the police told me it was harassment, not assault. So I know what you're talking about.
Yes. I remember that story. And there's a lot of, what do you call it when people go in a store, shoplifting and all sorts of crimes for which people are not being arrested. Okay.
Yeah.
So what I heard this person talking about say was, he said, these are the park policemen. These are the park service policemen. This is not the city policemen. And they probably thought, aha, here's our chance. You know, we can make an arrest because this person broke the law. I don't think it has anything to do with race, but who am I to say?
No, it doesn't appear that this is a racial. No, Elizabeth, this does not appear to be a race story. This just appears to be a story of an unusual circumstance of someone being arrested for swimming too long in the water. I don't see, personally, I don't see the racial aspect of this.
I appreciate what Wayne said, but it's just I wanted to offer that I have heard discussion about this from people in New York. And my sense was people felt the Park Service policeman said, we're going to make an arrest in this case. We're going to go ahead and do it. But unfortunately, just like the guy, the bodega owner who ended up getting arrested when he was the victim, unfortunately, examples are made often in the wrong case. How many people have gone swimming and not been arrested in that particular place? You know. Anyway, I just wanted to offer that perspective.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Thank you. So, Wayne, I just want to say we only have a couple of minutes, but I want to offer you our sincere condolences from everyone at WICC on the loss of your brother.
I want to thank you, Lisa. You're an amazing friend, and I appreciate WICC and the listeners. I have a lot of people who reached out because, you know, I lost my brother last week, if you guys don't know, and it was, you know, sudden, and it was a heart attack. And it was very difficult because out of the five family members, I'm the last of the siblings. So I was very, very close to him in Buffalo. So it's been trying. But, you know, it's people who are close to you that really care about you that help you get past these things. And I want to tell you, Lisa, as a person, she's obviously a great talk show host and a great judge. Well, that's part of her job, too. But just as a human being, she's an amazing person. And I could tell you she's been very comforting. And it's really a pleasure, and I'm happy to have her in my corner. And obviously, you know, the fam was great, but she's an amazing person. So I want to thank
Wayne,
all you guys
have
out
to say
there.
That.
And thanks for listening on the show. I mean, we just try to bring some clarity. That's why I asked about the race thing earlier, because that's the first thing that happens. And so somehow it winds up to be that.
That's
and
true.
We just want to be a world better place. And so I'm just as mad as those black cops. That was absurd. To arrest that man. I just thank God he was in one piece and it couldn't, you know, go on to the next level, you know, with his guns laying. So at least we're not discussing that.
That's true. Thank God. Yeah. No, but I think Elizabeth makes a good point, Wayne. There's a lot of pent up frustration among the average person in New York that real crimes are not being investigated or that criminals are being let out because of lax bail laws. So there's, whether it's true or not, there's a very real perception. And it certainly, as I said, happened to me with street crime, which has never happened before, where the police told me that, you know, it wasn't an assault and they weren't even going to bother to look for her. And, you know, she was psychotic attacking people. So there's a real concern on the streets of New York that police officers are demoralized in doing their job right now. There is that. Anyway, my condolences on your brother, and we will talk again next Wednesday. I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll be back behind the mic tomorrow. Stay tuned for Norm Pattis between noon and 2, and then Connecticut Today from 2 to 6.